Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior marketing professional from the UK, Kavita Agarwal. Kavita, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Great to be here.
Thank you. Kavita is a strategic marketing and innovation consultant and a whiskey marketing specialist. She has been, till recently, the global brand director for malts of Diageo. And a lot of you know that I love my malts, and we've spoken about malts in the past. So Kavita, before we get into marketing, tell me about your journey as a marketer in the world of whiskeys.
I mean, what can I say? I mean, it's a wonderful world of sharing and bringing alive some of the most beautiful stories of craftsmanship, of people, of places, of heritage and legacy, and just of boundless innovation. So it's a really, really exciting journey and a really exciting place to be if you're considering getting into marketing at some point in time. I've actually worked across multiple consumer good categories, but what I feel is really special about whiskey marketing is the emotion. Is just, it just begs you and taunts you to sort of share these stories. Nobody really needs to buy whiskey. They buy whiskey because they want to, because they aspire to it.
Correct.
And I think that gives you an immediate engagement story that no other consumer goods category perhaps does. So it's a wonderful, wonderful. And you know, I mean, places like Diageo, et cetera, where I have worked, eternally privileged, actually, and grateful that they provide each of their leaders a huge platform, actually, to just swing out, have some fun, and sort of add your own, author your own chapter, so to speak, to add to this vast and inexhaustible library of whiskey marketing. Yeah, that's the journey.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And yet, you know, till very recently, when you were global brand director, you decided to call it a day and walk out when you were right at the top and do something on your own. So tell me about that and about your core four of your life.
Indeed. So it actually took me the longest time to come to this decision. It certainly wasn't an impulsive one. But in the end, when I made it, it was really quite simple. You see, my joy of... I guess my jar, my professional jar, was overflowing with joy and highs and all of the rest. And I found myself really flowing with it, really quite enjoying it, actually. But I also came to realize that, I mean, there just came a time when I wanted other jars in my life to be equally full and flowing. And I felt like I needed to make some changes in order to make room for some of those other things in my life. So it really was just that. And that then sort of neatly brings me into this idea of my core four. It's really just a very simple construct, if you like, the way I look at life now and how I view success. So, I mean, very simply put, it is self-care and relationships is the first one. The second is about giving back a little bit like what you're doing for, you know, with your platform, the brand called You. I too sort of have different ways in which I give back. I work pro bono for some third sector organizations. I have a mentoring relationship for young talent with another organization called 1MM here in the UK and things like that. So that's the second core. The third one is feeding all these passions, whether they're new ones or old ones. I think it keeps you young, it keeps you growing, it keeps you dynamic and just makes life fun, worth looking forward to. So that's my third core. And then the fourth one is what I'm loosely sort of calling the future of work, which is really about taking all of these amazing learnings and experiences that we've had over our 25 plus year careers and then redeploying it, you know, almost kind of breaking it all up and rejoining it to see what ways you can still continue to contribute to society, to industry, and indeed to yourself, you know. So that's really the core four and, you know, happy balance of all of them. If you imagine a weighing scale with four handles, so to speak, is if all of these are in, you know, quiet, peaceful, happy equilibrium. That's success now for me.
Oh, wonderful. How wonderful. And I couldn't agree more with you, you know. I've just turned 66 and I feel so excited with every single conversation I have on the brand called You, because I learn in every conversation.
Totally.
You know, moving on now, and let's talk whiskey. I mean, it's my favorite spirit, and I'm sure it's for many, many others. But, you know, over the last, I first discovered malt in 1983, 84, when we used to live in Singapore. And since then, it's just gone through the roof. I want to ask you, as the former global brand director of malts, what is the reason for this incredible growth of malts?
I mean, it is a lovely story. I mean, it's just been one of those categories within whiskey is showing a renaissance, if you like, but within the world of whiskey and actually across all spirits, malts really beats all trajectories. And really there are, there are many reasons, but let me try and sort of chunk them up, if you like, into three or four reasons. Mm-hmm. The first is this long-term trend that we're seeing of premiumization, of people wanting to eat and drink better, you know. So whether it is, and all of that contributes to this idea of malts being really aspirational for people, because it is seen as something that is of a better quality, of a purer quality, of just something that you say for special occasions. Now you don't save them for special occasions. You pull that bottle out more often than you did before. It's also something that's much more shared with people than it was before. It's no longer that cigar bar, you know, by the fireside kind of moment. It's what you serve out when you have people over at home.
Yeah.
That nicely actually brings me into the second point, which is the occasion. So whiskey drinking occasions earlier used to be quite stiff ones, quite formal ones. And that's kind of democratized and it's become a lot more casual. You pull that bottle out more often. And that's also kind of really fueled the growth of malts per se. Then you have consumers really asking for authenticity in every part of our lives, so of every brand. And I don't think there's any other category like malts. And of course, I'm biased when I say that, but I'm saying I don't think there's any other category in this world that really allows for you to play into that story of authenticity, because you've got these people behind the whiskey, the places from where it comes from, all this heritage and legacy that you can talk about. It really is telling people authentic stories, which I think people see through and they really like that. Yeah. And then there is, as I said, the growth of craft. And finally, this explosion, if you like, of people wanting to discover new things, of having new experiences. And, you know, malts just offers you a plethora of flavors to try, brands to experience, places to kind of get stories from. So I think all of that feeds into this lore and lure of malts. And I mean, it's just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's more to come.
Fascinating. And yet, Kavita, whiskey as an alcohol seems to have endured, you know, 10 years ago, it was all cognac, you know, there was rum, then some days it's white spirits. And yet the go-to spirit that seems to have stayed is whiskey. Why is that the case?
I mean, how long is a piece of thread in some ways? Where can we take it back? If you sort of go back to the historical sort of genesis or growth of whiskey, the first whiskey is supposed to have been or believed to have been sort of distilled in the late 1400s here in Scotland, here in the UK. It then became extremely popular within the British population and in the UK. And of course, as we know from history, at one point in time, the British influence covered a span of a fourth of the land surface of this earth and touched about 450 million people. Tell me which other category of alcohol or indeed brand would be able to rival that kind of influence, you know? So I'm saying, I think there is definitely that scale of like every country that it touched, then the people of that country sort of adopted. An example, a really good example that you and I are very familiar with, of course, is India. Just the love of whiskey that Indians have, you know? And this comes from, you could call it a colonial legacy, but I almost hate to kind of call it that way. It's just that we embraced it as as did many other countries in this world. And that's one reason, I think. The next is, of course, the range of flavors that whiskey can offer you is unrivaled again. So if you think about cognac and rum, you mentioned both of them, they tend to be on the slightly sweeter profile on the taste map. But whiskey can offer you something delicate and floral. It can offer you something fruity and sweet. It can offer you something that's rich and creamy, and it can offer you something that's peaty and smoky.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's just such a, I mean, and this is just, again, you know, you can have like permutations and combinations of all of these kind of things. So there's just so much to offer for people that I think everyone who touches whiskey eventually finds one that they really, really like. And that's then become so so popular that popular culture has adopted it.
Well said.
You know, from Great Gatsby and in literature to films, Dawn is an example in India, a long Bollywood film that showcased, I think it was VAT 69, if I'm not mistaken. And then you've got Blade Runner, even James Bond. They all have, you know, immortalized whiskey, if you like. And I think those are just some of the reasons that you have. And of course, the sheer scale of innovation that keeps coming through. So all of the bigger manufacturers and smaller manufacturers actually of whiskey, anyone who's touched whiskey and left a stamp on it has ended up really creating a new chapter of it, continues to reinvent itself and make itself relevant for any generation in any era.
Absolutely.
I think that's what makes it enduring.
Very, very interesting. And yet, given the amount of restrictions there are around the world on being able to build a brand, an alcohol brand or a whiskey brand, I wanted to ask you, as such a senior marketing guru in whiskey, what goes into building a successful alcohol brand?
It's no different than building any brand, I would say. You know, we tend to consider whiskey marketing almost as if you are maybe handicapped in some ways because there are regulations and things like that. But no, really not. On the contrary, I would say it's very much like building any other brand. At the heart of it is a great product. And there are stories around that product. There's a red thread of, you know, your values, your positioning that sort of really brings each of these stories to life. And then your job as a marketer is to find those stories, to be able to tell it in the most exciting way, and to be able to make sure that you're really very clear of that North Star that is there in that brand. And whether it is the marketing that you do or the partnerships that you have or the causes that you, you know, raise your voice to, or the packaging that you do or the character that you sort of bring forth, they're all telling that story. You know, it comes from that point of view about people, about life, about yourself. And I think that's true of any successful brand, and definitely true of alcohol marketing.
And has social media, which is now both a boon and a bane for a marketer, has social media been able to support the challenges alcohol marketing has faced?
I mean, look, the one thing I would probably say is alcohol is a very social category. You consume it when you're with people. And I think just by the nature of that, there are such synergies with social marketing and social media that, of course, it has been a great channel and a great partner. I mean, it's not just where we as brands kind of speak to our consumers, but it's also where consumers speak to each other about the experiences they're having with our brands. But at the end of it, you have to give them something of meaning to talk about, right? And if you don't do that and you just go on about your brand speak, I think that will ultimately be seen through as brand speaking down to you. So the most successful social media brands, including alcohol ones, are that know how to be able to involve your consumer in the conversation and offer you enough experiences, whether it is drinks or serves or partnerships or conversations that you want to have. And then, yes, it, of course, it's been a great partner. It's
been a great partner. Very interesting. And, you know, having spent time in marketing myself and in cigarettes and so on, Alcohol is probably one of the best price-laddered product I have ever seen, which yeah. means that your consumer runs from, you know, $3 a bottle, I'm just giving an arbitrary number, to $3,000 a bottle.
Yeah.
How do you, as a brand director, manage, and you were managing all the brands, determine consumer tastes based on so much research?
So consumer tastes are, I mean, I think there many things sort of obviously influence your consumer taste, right? I think your life cycle and life stage influences consumer taste. Where you come from, which part of the world you are in, influences consumer taste. What your experiences and connection with the world is, how mature you are in your whiskey drinking journey, all of this impacts consumer tastes of alcohol. But, I mean, back to the question that you sort of just asked about the price ladder. It is when a brand has got that red thread and a very clear point of view and knows whom it is trying to sort of market to and why it even exists as a standalone brand in this world, it becomes actually quite, I won't say easy, but easier to be able to understand how to be able to give a piece of that brand at every price ladder so that the experience is seamless, it's relevant to the consumer who's going to be having it. So, you know, I mean, many brands, I mean, all of the brands that I was working on had perhaps the biggest volume sitting in the $45 to, you know, $80 sort of price point, about 30 to 60 pounds, in other words, sort of price point. That's where perhaps the maximum volume or liquid kind of sat in. However, you know, we year on year, we brought out whiskeys, as you said, 3,000 times dollars, even $50,000, you know. And they have a place in their own right to be done. But I think the key thing is, how do you make sure that you understand what to offer across that price ladder so that everybody feels that they love the brand, they can participate in the brand at whatever level they choose to buy in at.
Very well said. Very well said. So I'm going to, our next question, I'm going to come to India. You know, and you said very rightly that, you know, India, there's a lot of alcohol being made and bottled in India. And, you know, I remember 1979, people used to tell me when I joined ITC that more Scotch is consumed in India than is bottled in Scotland. And yet today, there are some amazing malts coming out of India. I wanted to ask you, what is, in your opinion, the changes that have been happening in the Indian whiskey market?
You know, I think the first thing I would probably say is India is the biggest whiskey market in the world. It's the second biggest Scotch market in the world. So I think the question perhaps to ask is not what why the changes are happening now, but that why did it take it so long to happen in some ways? Because we have a great passion for the whiskey, for our whiskey. We certainly have a lot of intellect and a lot of resources for us to be able to sort of create our own whiskies. And there are some amazing whiskies coming out of India. Amrut is one of them, which has been an award-winning single malt whiskey for some time.
There's Paul John, there is Rampur.
There is, and Diageo very recently launched its own Indian single malt whiskey, which was called Godavan. It's inspired by the Indian bustard, the bird, etc. So, I mean, there are lots and lots of new stories. There's, I was just reading this morning on LinkedIn about a brand called Indri, which has been awarded again. It's also an Indian single malt. So there's certainly a lot of... I think dynamism in the Indian single malt business right now, and rightly so, I would say. The some of it is obviously got to do with the industry maturing as it's, and it's also got to do with the generation of Indians, I guess, maturing and coming into their own and feeling like they'd like to have something to offer to this world that is uniquely theirs and rivals, you know, every other single malt out there.
How wonderful. Absolutely. Well said. My next question to you is on the younger consumers, you know, the millennials, the Gen Zs, who are now coming into the market, getting into leadership roles, have more money.
Yeah.
How are they looking at alcohol? Because I see a lot of them going into white spirits, and yet I see with both my sons, they may drink white spirits, but when I'm with them, they love their malt. So what is happening from your perspective as someone who is marketing these brands with the younger generation?
The younger generation is truly quite exciting. It's really changed the way alcohol markets itself and brown spirits in general market themselves. Also the way in which white spirits have started marketing themselves. It's interesting, the younger consumers are actually very different from younger consumers, let's say about 20, 30 years ago, where even 15, 20 years ago, I would say, you know, where when you pictured younger consumers, you would have this image of party going, hands up in the air, release moments. It's not so anymore, or not so much anymore. I'm not saying they don't have fun, they do, but they really value what they drink. They're interested in what the brand has to say to them. They're interested in the backstory of the brand. They're interested in how that brand is made. It's a maker economy right now, craft economy. There are people who, they want to hear the stories of all of this. And therefore, you know, vodka's had to change the way it markets itself, learn from people like gin and whiskey. And gin has had to, you know, sort of has come into its own. And whiskey has always been blessed with all of these maker stories, all these ace and provenance stories of all of these heritage stories. So rather than saying it, you know, so we've got those stories. What's changed? And I think what the younger millennial generation and Gen Z has been able to sort of bring to the category is really, really exciting. It's democratized whiskey, actually. It's making it more inclusive in some ways. It actually, in many ways, it's making us more innovative. It's making us more responsible. It's making it more accessible and even fun. I mean, it really is quite. It's such an age of, you know, innovation and reinventing and, you know, sort of rethinking the way we drink whiskey, the way we market whiskey. When we market whiskey, it's brought us into sundowner moments. You can take it on a picnic sometimes. Right now, you have it at a barbecue. I mean, it really has brought out that whiskey from the back of the cupboard, very late in the night, to from intimate moments to something a lot more social.
Absolutely.
We all enjoy, and you know, it's about bonding at the end of the day.
How wonderful. So I've got time for two more questions. One is for you personally, and that is, after such an amazing journey, and you did tell me about your core four, what next for Kavita?
Well, I think, you know, keeping those three, those four handles nicely balanced really is the next for me. I am working on a couple of projects in that future of workspace, some of which is, you know, continuing in the same area of, you know, alcohol marketing, like I've done before, working with really interesting small brands that are that are very interesting, and, you know, growing them to scale has always been a passion. And so really privileged and grateful that I can have the chance to do that and work with people who are, you know, entrepreneurial, fun, young, passionate and driven. I'm also working on a couple of other things in the area of giving back and also a project that I'm sort of working on silently away, too early yet to kind of speak openly or publicly about it, perhaps in about 6 to 8 months when it's advanced a little bit and I have a bit more confidence around it, then it would be an area to sort of discuss further. But
fantastic. Fantastic. And we'll talk about that whenever you're ready, 1 year from now. And my last question to you, Kavita, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your amazing journey, your learnings, your leading large businesses, you know, what would you say are three lessons or three learnings you would want our viewers and listeners to take away from your journey and from our conversation?
Wow. I think the first would be, if you enjoy what you do and work hard at it, success will come. So focus on what you love. And I think the rest will sort of follow. At least that's been the way it's worked out in my life. So I'm quite a convert on that. Then I think the, you know, like everything that's really good also has a dark side to it. So I'd probably say if you love any one thing too much, watch out. It might fail you. So my learning has been to nurture multiple loves and love deeply, equally. Of course, this takes time and discipline. If I had known this as a younger self, I think I might have, you know, done differently today. So I would say learn that early would be my second sort of thing. And then I would probably say that don't ever be afraid to do something different if it's for the right reasons. So if you stay with something for the wrong reasons, the holes will show sooner or later. And if you try something different and it's for the right reasons, even if it's challenging at first, it will all turn out fine.
Wonderful. And on that note, and your three amazing lessons, focus on what you love. The rest will follow. Watch out if you love something too much, which really is that try and do multiple things that you develop interest in and do different things, take risks. Kavitha, thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey, about the core four of your life. And I sincerely hope this core four will become some seriously big and powerful and strong pillars in your life. Thank you for speaking to me about whiskey. I mean, it has been always my favorite. And I learned some very interesting things from you today on malts and on whiskey and so many other things. Thank you for speaking to me and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh, and good luck to you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.